let's talk a little bit in general about how religion and money kind of intersect, because I think not just people who are Christians or were grown up in Christian households, but people even of other cultures, right? Other religions, like there's a little bit of this struggle, because I think a lot of people who believe in God, they stem and they believe that having money is evil, or it's not something that's a good thing, which is not true. It's a little bit of a mistrue.
Where we are financially oftentimes comes down to our decisions. Sometimes it comes down to someone else's decision that impacts us. That for sure happens as well. But many people, you know, they just make emotional decisions with their money. And when I say emotional, I mean the decisions that they made, they're being driven by fear. They're being driven by unchecked ambition, comparison, or wanting to feel a certain way.
Hey guys, and welcome back to another episode of Financial Mastery Simplified. I am your host, Jacqueline or Jax Kreider. And today we have PJ on. He is an amazing financial expert. He does a lot of financial planning and consulting, as well as he's recently written a book all about money. And so we are super excited to have him on the show today. So welcome, PJ. Tell us a little bit about yourself, what you do, and why you're excited to be on the show today.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I'm honored to be here. Yeah, my name is PJ Vescovi, and I've been in financial services, if you will, for almost 20 years, actually more than 20 years, as I was in the mortgage industry, similar to you. Been a financial advisor, financial planner, consultant, and it's sort of money has followed me my entire life. And so recently that led to me writing my very first book, thrilled about it. Took me about 5 years to write it. And it's called The Great Money Reform. And it's a guide to what I call financial health, getting to a place where we can have a healthy relationship with money. I don't subscribe to the belief that if you're wealthy, you're healthy. I believe that you can be healthy financially, whether you have it or not. But also, I believe that healthy things grow, right? And so if we if we do get financially healthy, more times often than not, that leads to wealth and to success and productivity. So that's the heart behind the book. That's really the heart behind my entire practice, is really seeing people get to a place where they're healthy financially, where they can provide for themselves, provide for their kids, be generous, and not have to think about money all the time, you know, but be at peace with it, be healthy so that they can have the life that they desire to have.
No, I totally agree. Well, and I mean, you and I, like, you know, we were having a little bit of conversation before the show. I feel like so often money is such a stressor for so many people. They don't really realize, you know, that they are thinking about it all the time. And then there is a lot of habits, a lot of things that are bubbling up from maybe your family, your tendencies and things like that. I actually wrote a book myself. Mine is more mortgage centric, mortgage related. So I can appreciate that it took you some time to write that book, because I was I just got to a point where I was so sick and tired of people getting hosed when it comes to mortgage, because so many people don't tell the truth. They are not honest with people, right? And again, I'm all about making sure that people have a really clear understanding of what they're getting into. What does it look like? How does it work? And money is, it's such a big thing. And I think so many people don't want to talk about it because they feel unsuccessful with money. And I don't think that's necessary if you are doing it intentionally, which I talk a lot on the show all the time about intentionality. Yeah. Anybody who watches knows that I talk about intentionality. So tell us a little bit more about like what you really dive into in your book. Cause I know when you and I were speaking before the show, it's awesome. Like the kind of things that you talk about specifically.
Yeah. So I think, and just to your point, like I feel like when it comes to money, there's oftentimes that there's emotional, spiritual, mental issues beneath the surface that lead to some of the financial, that have financial consequences, right? And so a lot of times we try to, like, you know, grit our teeth and budget ourselves into health, or, you know, save ourselves into health, or live like a hermit, you know, so we can get ahead financially. And you might find some success with that, but if you don't deal with the underlying root issue of why you're struggling with money, it's only going to resurface, you know. And so I worked as a wealth manager for over 15 years with some of the largest financial services firms in the world. One of the firms manages close to $1 trillion. They have $1 trillion under management. And I can tell you that some of the most unhealthy people in the world are some of the most wealthy. For sure. And so that can't be the target, right? can't be the target is just let me get money. But if you cruise on social media, TikTok, Instagram, that's all you see. Hey, how to make money while you're sleeping, or how to create a digital product and make $20,000. And there's very few content around, hey, this is how you approach this is how you approach financial stewardship in health, right? And so the first half of the book is just that. It is having a healthy relationship with the money. We were talking before the show. I have a background of religion and just having a relationship with God. And for me, it's seeing him as the provider and not me as the provider. And it takes a burden off of me of having to provide for myself versus just simply obeying what I feel like he's leading me to do. And, even exploring and the difference between ownership and stewardship, and just seeing yourself as a steward, a good steward, and what it means to be a good steward, and dealing with maybe some of the bad money habits that were passed down to you from your parents, or even the culture that you were raised in. And then, chapter four deals with even generational wealth and the father's blessing, and how, right now, I think 18 million kids in the United States are being raised without a father. And the poverty rate among those households is 36%. Well, that's systemic dysfunction, because what happens is lack gets passed on from down the family. And how do you break that, and then begin to operate in ways that are going to produce generational blessing, where you can be a blessing to your kids' kids, and provide for them? And it just comes down to taking a different approach mentally to money. I have an old mentor of mine who said that poverty is not a state of being, it's a state of mind. Poverty
For sure.
is not the state of not having, it's the fear of not getting that causes you to hold on too tightly to what you have. It's a state of mind. And so how do you break that, begin to think differently, right? And so that's the first half of the book. Second half of the book is all practical. Right. Evaluating how you spend your money. What gets in the way of you saving money? What are some principles for paying off debt? How do you have a financial plan? Even if you don't have money, how do you have a financial plan? And then what are some approaches you can take to things like earning and investing that can help propel you financially? Every chapter of the book has reflection questions. Some has actual assignments that you can do, either, with your spouse or by yourself or even with a group. You can do these assignments, and they will begin to help you have a framework and a blueprint for achieving financial health in your life.
Stay tuned. We'll be back right after this message from our sponsors.
Imagine having the power to control your financial destiny, no matter where you start. Welcome to the Financial Mastery Simplified course and resource platform, where financial education is tailored to your unique journey. We cover everything you need, from basic budgeting and saving strategies to advanced investing and retirement planning. Learn at your own pace with lessons that match your level of experience. Whether you're a beginner or looking to enhance your financial knowledge, join our community of learners and benefit from shared insights and expert guidance. The Financial Mastery Simplified Course and Resource Platform equips you with the skills and confidence to take charge of your financial future. Ready to master your finances? Enroll in our courses today at the Financial Mastery Simplified Course and Resource Platform. Start your path to financial independence now.
Visit us at fms.tips and fms.college for more information.
Hello, and welcome to PBJ Mortgage, where your home ownership dreams become reality. Today, we want to share why choosing PBJ Mortgage is the right choice for your home financing needs. At PBJ Mortgage, we're built on a foundation of values that drive us every day. Our commitment to educate, empathize, and empower our clients sets us apart in the mortgage industry. Our clients are at the heart of everything we do, and their success stories speak volumes. With years of experience, our team possesses in-depth knowledge of the mortgage programs, ensuring you receive expert guidance and the best possible rates. We offer a diverse range of loan options to suit your unique needs, including conventional, FHA, VA, and more. No matter your situation, we've got a solution. At PBJ Mortgage, we pride ourselves on providing personalized service. Our dedicated loan officers are here to guide you every step of the way, making the process as smooth as making a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. We understand that time is of the essence, which is why we've streamlined our processes for efficiency and convenience. Transparency and clear communication are paramount. You'll always know where you stand throughout your mortgage journey. Reach out to us today to set up a call to discover your options. If you're ready to make your home ownership dreams a reality, contact PBJ Mortgage today. Let us empower you during this exciting journey. Phone number 4-693-733-107, www.pbjteam.com. Visit our website or give us a call to get started. We look forward to helping you secure your future home. PBJ Mortgage, where home begins.
Thanks for your patience.
That's awesome. Well, yeah, and I think, you know, let's talk a little bit in general about how religion and money kind of intersect, because I think not just people who are Christians or were grown up in Christian households, but people even of other cultures, right? Other religions, like there's a little bit of this struggle, because I think a lot of people who believe in God, they stem and they believe that having money is evil, or it's not something that's a good thing, which is not true. It's a little bit of a mistrue, right, on some of those things. And the funny thing is that truly money is actually fake. It's literally a construct that we made up, right? I mean, if you roll back all the way back in time, like that wasn't even really a thing, right?
It was cattle.
Right. Yeah, exactly. We use trading, we use, you know, bartering, like things like this. That was way before like the existence of money. So when people are associating that, it kind of, you know, makes me laugh. And I definitely think that this is, again, where some of this generational stuff bubbles up, right? Because we think that money and its tie must be, you know, bad or whatever, or we have a lot of subconscious beliefs. I talk a lot about how we actually are born with lack. Even if you come from a family who doesn't have that inherently in them, that we're actually born with that. Why? Because our RAS, our reticular activating system, actually is looking for threat. And so there is that sense of lack, right? That something's going to come for us, something's going to attack us. And it's our job. We have to reshape, reframe that belief system. And obviously your parents can help with that. So if your parents didn't have a sense of lack, but unfortunately most people did. And if you want the re-emphasis of where that even came from, if your parents were immigrants, they probably lived in a situation where they didn't have a lot. They came together to come here. Or if your parents were not immigrants and they lived in the United States during the Great Depression, it underscored that, oh my gosh, money is rare. Money is sacred. You know, my whole family and my whole life is going to go under, you know, et cetera. And I think that is such a crazy idea, because the truth is that, like, I've told a little bit of my personal story of the last couple of years. I probably have made less money than I've made in eons. I've had more debt and things weighing on me, more challenges. And there's definitely moments that it's been rough. I'm not going to pretend that it hasn't, but I probably have had a lot more peace than I've ever had. And so having less money hasn't necessarily been the thing, right? It's been more uncomfortable, I'll be real in that respect, right? But it hasn't necessarily, and so people just misunderstand. They think, oh, I have more money, my problems go away. That's not true.
For sure. Yeah. And I mean, there's a lot there. I mean, I'm actually, my grandparents were immigrants to this country, same on my wife's side, you know, through Ellis Island and York. And I grew up in New England. So it's amazing how, like, when people came over to this country, they set up in these communities where with Italians were with Italians, and Irish were with Irish, and Polish were with Polish. And they created these communities for survival, not for thriving, really. And that's really what you're talking to, is that survival based mentality versus a thriving based mentality. And it does take a lot of intentionality, as you say, to recognize, hey, I'm operating out of fear right now, or I'm operating out of a spirit of lack right now. I talk about the orphan mindset, you know, the orphan believes that there's only one pie and I have to get my slice, right?
Correct.
But when you don't have that orphan's mindset and you have sort of a mindset of a son or a daughter, you think, you believe there's a pie for everybody, right? And I have one just for me. And so you have to really recognize those patterns in yourself. And, you know, why do you make the decisions that you make? Do you make them out of fear, or do you make them out of trust, and do you make them out of faith, right? And so you talked about religion, and you know, I can only speak to the one that I am, right? But I do think that that faith played a major role in my understanding of money. And it's two extremes. The first one you mentioned was poverty equals piety, you know? And so the more impoverished I am, you know, the more pleased God is with me, you know, which is interesting because I don't take that approach with my children. You know, like, I don't like, oh, wow, look how great they are. They're broke. It's not what I want for them, you know, but it's interesting how how some people take on that belief system that, oh yeah, like God's pleased with me. That's not true at all. I think in some religions, they even have to take a vow of poverty. You know, if you're a church leader, you have to take a vow of poverty. I'm like, no, I think I'll find another religion. Yeah. No, I don't want to do that. But then there's the other opposite, the other extreme, which says that, well, hey, if you're wealthy, God approves of you. And that's a lie and a trap. You get stuck into these systems of approval and keeping up with the Joneses and look at me, look what I have. God must love me, right? And that's just so abusive as well. And try taking that message to some of the persecuted people groups around the world. It's not going to hold up. So you're going to tell them, because you're enslaved and because you're persecuted and because you have lack, you're not loved by God. I mean, it's just almost as ridiculous as the first extreme, right? And so, you know, when you read the Bible, right, for me, you know, Jesus talked about money all the time. You know, why? Yeah. Why? Was it because he was obsessed with it? I don't think so. I think he talks about it all the time because he knew we were thinking about it all the time. And so he would use it to make a deeper spiritual point. You know, one thing too, he never asked people for money. I recognize that. God, Jesus never once asked people for money. He just spoke about it, you know? And so I think there's, between those two extremes, there's always the happy medium, which is a place of health. You know, whether you have it or not, you could still be financially healthy. And I think that's really, really important while examining your roots and some of the beliefs around money that was passed on to you. As an immigrant family, I mean, I had grandparents that hid money under the mattress because they couldn't trust the banks because of the Great Depression, right?
Absolutely.
You know, they also put plastic all over their furniture. You know, and right, just some of those belief systems that were like, hey, like, you know, like there's insurance now, the bank can't rip you off, you know, like we can move on towards that, you know, and so you've got to recognize what are those mentalities that were passed on to you and break up with them so that you can be healthy.
I think so often too that, you know, we live in an era where you're seeing, you know, all the different options, all the different choices. And you're, of course, believing everything that's happening on social media, which we all know that that's not true, right? No one is usually posting all the horrible things happening with them. They're posting all the positives and all the lovely things and all the beautiful parts, right? They're not necessarily posting that, you know, there's a lot of dead or horrible things happening in the background, in the backdrop. And I think it is very easy, which is why my viewpoint on financial mastery has little to do with how much money you have and has a lot more to do with how financially healthy and happy you are than the amount of money in your bank account, right?
Yeah.
And yes, I understand that, you know, obviously we all have to have a certain amount of money to live, but like, we are not necessarily, especially as Americans, maybe challenging the status quo as much as we should, right? The old adage, like, I know that I've had to challenge my own parents on the idea of when you basically become an adult, like you leave the house, right? Because I have a lot of friends of a lot of different cultures. And one of the things that they say is part of the reason that sometimes our culture succeeds with money where yours doesn't is because of that viewpoint, because you can't coexist in the same household to get yourself to a financial position where you're good Instead, you're just like so obsessed with kicking the kid out that it's like we haven't thought that through.
It's a strong desire for independence versus that even that cultural of interdependence is like, hey, let's help each other succeed. Yeah, 100%.
For sure. And I think that a lot of people, if they start stepping back and just asking, like, how does that fit and how does that look? When you start really digging deep and you start really asking yourself the hard questions, and I say this because I'm a very independent person. Okay. I'm very independent. And I told myself I would never go back and live with my parents. And because of a scenario with a real estate situation, we actually have been displaced with my parents. It was supposed to be for a brief amount of time, about maybe 3 to 6 months. We've actually been there for roughly 2 years. And it's taught me a lot, not only just about money, but it's taught me a lot about myself, about some of the things that I need to work on internally that will help my entire life's health, right? Not just money, but mentally, spiritually, like all of the things. And so oftentimes I think we're missing the boat trying to force ourselves into everybody's idea of a box of what money or success needs to look like, instead of really taking the step back and being intentional and asking myself, okay, why are some of these things existing? How do I make sure that I'm succeeding on my own terms? No, I don't have to have the approval of every single person on social media or in my family or in my church or in my synagogue or whatever, you know, religion we're applies to, you know, we're taking part of, whatever that looks like. Because the truth is that every single person was created differently. They're created for a different, unique set of goals and things. And so for us to be forcing everybody into one box is a huge loss, in my opinion.
Stay tuned. We'll be back right after this message from our sponsors.
Welcome to Financial Mastery Simplified, your go-to podcast for making smart money decisions. We break down complex financial topics into easy to understand advice you can use every day. Our experts cover everything from budgeting and saving to investing and retirement planning. We give you the tools to take control of your money and build the future you want. With Financial Mastery Simplified, you'll feel informed and empowered to make the best choices for your financial health. Tune in to Financial Mastery Simplified on your favorite podcast platform. Start your journey to financial confidence today.
Visit us at fms.tips and fms.college for more information.
Welcome to House U, where we believe in the power of education. At House U, we're more than just a brand. We're your partner in home ownership, dedicated to educating, equipping, and empowering you every step of the way. Education is at the heart of everything we do. We offer comprehensive resources designed to make home ownership simple and accessible for all. From understanding mortgage options to mastering home maintenance, House U provides the knowledge you need to make informed decisions with confidence. We host workshops and seminars, bringing together experts and community members to share insights and build a stronger, more informed community. Because when you're educated, you're empowered. House U, home ownership made simple for all. Visit our website or contact us today to start your journey with House U. Empower yourself with knowledge and embrace the joy of home ownership.
Thanks for your patience. Now back to our conversation.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, as you were talking, I was just thinking too, like one of the things that I do with people all the time when I'm talking to people about their finances, and you know, I could do wealth management, financial consulting, even financial coaching, is helping people understand why they make the decisions that they make. You know, and so because it really all comes down to decisions. Where we are financially oftentimes comes down to our decisions. Sometimes it comes down to someone else's decision that impacts us. That for sure happens as well. But many people, you know, they just make emotional decisions with their money. And when I say emotional, I mean the decisions that they made, they're being driven by fear. They're being driven by unchecked ambition, comparison, or wanting to feel a certain way. I mean, when I'm talking to a single mom who makes $30,000 a year, but has a $750 car payment, it makes you scratch your head and say, what are you actually doing? Like, how do you expect to get ahead? And it was what really opened my eyes to this was when I was working in wealth management. There's an organization called Dalbar, and Dalbar every single year, they do a study of investor behavior. And for years, every single year, they put out what's called a quantitative analysis of investor behavior. And they analyze what causes investors to make the decisions that they make. And back in 2005, 2006, they let out this report. And the report basically said, hey, you know, if you educate investors and if you give them all the tools and all the ways to do research and you make it simple for them, they're going to find ways to be successful. And so firms threw millions and billions of dollars into tools and research and evaluators, all to help investors make decisions. And 10 years later, I think it was 2015 or 2016, they released a report. And this is what the report said verbatim. It said, all efforts to educate investors into sound decisions have proven to be futile. At the end of the day, investors will make emotional decisions.
Yep.
And what they found was, rather than being education heavy, they had to combine education with consultative approaches to wealth management to help people self-realize who they are and then outsource their weaknesses and build around their strengths, right? Because like most investors, I saw in 2008, 2009, they punched out of the market, you know, and they realized, you know, six or seven figure losses because they were afraid. You combine fear with lack of knowledge, and it's a recipe for financial disaster.
For sure. Oh, yeah. No, I think that so frequently that is one of the more major issues, right? Is that we are not stepping back. I mean, I'm unusual in the mortgage space because we have actually told people that this is probably not the best time for them to buy a house, depending on what their situation is, because we listen to what it is they want and what it is they need, right? And we want to make sure that they understand fully what they're getting into. And if that ultimately leads to them making the decision, okay, maybe this is not the right time for me, that's okay.
Yes.
Right? I mean, we're not here trying to force you to buy a house because one, somebody told you you needed to, or two, you're going to try to stretch yourself so thin, right? I mean,
right.
You have to know your own situation, your own financial perspective. And so we're not going to, you know, force you one way or the other, but we will give advice and we will kind of help you because you're right. Most people do make really emotional decisions. And a lot of the things, I mean, the truth is, and this is what I've learned because I've had this conversation most recently with my mom. She's like, I don't know why you're doing all this education because, you know, most people just really don't want the help. But what happens is that that's true that a lot of people don't want the help because they're comfortable. Even if they're a little miserable, there is comfort in what is the known, right? But when you reach a point, and that's where a lot of people are reaching right now, because inflation has put a lot of pressure on people. You've had a lot of pressure with the fact that we haven't had significant income gains for well over a decade, probably more closer to 20 years, truthfully. When you really start looking at the amount of financial pressure that is being placed on people, now they're starting to see the crunch. And so they're seeking out information of what do I do differently? How do I make a different choice or whatever, right? But again, it's coming out of an emotional space of,
yeah,
holy cow, what do I do now?
Yeah. Yeah, there's a couple of things that we do, or I encourage, even in the book, I encourage people to do when it comes to making sound financial decisions and recognizing that emotional or sticker price or comparison type of decision making. Is the first thing I encourage people to do is to establish a personal financial board of directors. So I encourage people to go out and find two to three people who are not, you know, their Uncle Vinny who lives in the basement, you know, or their Aunt Sally who, you know, can't hold on a job, but like find three to five people who are successful, who are wise and who care about you. So that might mean it takes some time to do it, but then give them full access to your finances and to your decision-making. Invite them in, which takes a whole lot of humility, transparency, and vulnerability. But
for sure,
guess what? Those are all attributes of people who are successful. So I ask everyone to create that financial board of directors so that when you're making a decision, I'm not talking about $20 at the grocery store, but I'm talking about bigger decisions like,
yeah,
like, should I buy this car? Should I get this insurance? Should I take this business opportunity or whatever? You're inviting them in and then allowing them to speak to it. I have a friend of mine, multi-millionaire, played in the NFL for years. And one of his jobs in my life is I want him to kill an idea when I bring it to him. So I'll bring him an idea and he will try to kill it. And the reason why I do that is if it's still breathing after he's done, I know it's an okay idea, you know? And
Definitely.
I cherish that. I cherish that relationship because it's saved me often. Another thing I encourage people to do is have a purchase policy. One of my purchase policies is I will wait 48 hours before any major financial decision. This works for us all the time. It works for us with buying cars, buying houses. You have to wait with buying a house, but with other big decisions,
For sure.
because if I usually feel if I'm rushing, I'm typically making a bad decision. So the purchase power, the purchase policy gives me 48 hours to stop, think, and talk about it with my wife. And after 48 hours, if we found unity, then we move forward. And what it does is it causes my emotions to take a secondhand seat or a back seat to my thought processes and making a sound decision. It's helped us so many times. I have so many stories of like last car on the lot, you know, it's not going to be here in 2 days. And then we go a week later and it's still there and we get the same car for $2,500 less. And so those are some things that you can do to begin to put your emotions in the back seat, right? And let sound decision making lead.
Well, I was gonna say, I mean, if you've done any sort of sales training or anybody who has watched any sort of sales related thing, I mean, basically they teach you that that is the way that you close things is by getting them to believe that if they don't make the decision right this second, that it's not gonna be there or it's not gonna exist or whatever, right? And I have a issue with shopping. I talk about it often on the show. In fact, I joke about my 800 purple cups that are behind me in the background or whatever. And then I usually always hold up the one that's sitting on my desk because there's usually at least one, sometimes two. And I talk about the fact that the way that I trick my brain into stuff is I will add things to a cart and then I will let them sit for 24, 48, you know what I mean? Because even though those are not that big of a decision, you know, most of them are, you know, $20 to $100 choices. So not like saddling yourself with a car payment or a house payment or some other giant payment like this, right? Student loan payments, things of that sort. I still, because of the way that my brain operates and it gets dopamine from the purchasing, I have sort of tricked myself into being like, hey, I got some satisfaction because I kind of felt like I added to the cart and then I have some time to step back to see if it
Yeah, I love
aligns
that.
with what I actually need.
Yeah, I love that. I love it. And a couple other things I have people a lot of times when I'm doing consulting with people when it comes to their finances, you find where they're overspending. So I have an exercise I think I talked about, you know, before the show, the white cup test, which basically is, you know, the average American spends $1,400 a year at Starbucks, but 61% of Americans don't have $1,000 saved for emergencies. And it is this idea that we typically prioritize comforts and lifestyle over long term. So typically, where people overspend the most is eating out and coffee, right? Some online shopping, but that's typically the area. And so one of the things I encourage people to do is when they create a budget at the be in your budget, like create a separate account that you fund every month or every week, which is your discretionary spending account. And it's in a separate account, separate from all your other spending. And
Sure.
say you put $250 in there a month, right? When you hit $250, you're done
That's
until next month. That's it. You know, and that way it's like, oh, how much money do I have in my account? 2,000. This is good. And then you forgot about the three bills on auto pay. And then before you know it, you have $50 in your bank account, right? Like, so you just open up a separate account, you fund it at the beginning of every month or every 2 weeks, and then when it's done, it's done. You can use that for eating out, for coffee, for online spending, and you're
Yeah,
sort
for
of
whatever you
dis
want.
yeah, that's one thing you can do. And another thing I challenge people all the time on, especially when it comes to buying cars, is that if you are spending more money on your car than you are saving every month, you're doing it wrong.
It's a good one.
Most people are spending $500 to $600 a month on their car because that's a nice car. That's the value of it is quickly racing to zero, right?
For
But
sure.
they're saving $50 a week.
I know. It's
And it
crazy to me. We actually say that a lot in mortgage because they don't like they come to us and they have very little, if any, money saved. And I'm like, but your car payment is $1,000 a month.
It's crazy. Yes. What's terrible is that when you see that, and you're a mortgage person, so you see that, you see people overspending on liabilities, and because of that, they can't buy an asset that's actually going to produce wealth for their family in the future. And it's just a mentality shift that has to happen. You have to be willing to drive around that 1987 Jeep Grand Cherokee that smells like trash. That was mine, right? But has no payment on it, so that you could put away. I tell people all the time, just go into any type of investment calculator, put in $500 a month at 9% for 20 years, and tell me where that ends up. If you like that number, it changes the way that you approach your decisions every single day, right? Yeah. I paid off $125,000 in bad debt while simultaneously building savings because of this. Because of this. And what I found, and this is just my personal story, what I found was when I began to live conservatively and budget, I began to make the most out of the money I was making. And then I saw how much easier it was for me to make money and then control the amount of money I was making. Most people will raise the lifestyle for the level of money that they're making.
Oh, for sure.
Instead of employing their dollars for their future. So this is an expression that I say in the book is, do something today that the 10-year older version of you will say thank you for. So think about the 10-year older you. What do you want for him, her, and their children? Those, what they have or don't have, is contingent on the decisions that you decide to make today. Yeah. And sacrifices. Yeah.
For sure. Yeah. No, and I totally agree with you. I mean, I actually have this budget tracker that I encourage people to use when they're starting to take steps towards figuring things out. And what it is it has nothing to do with your major bills. In fact, the tracker is not for that purpose. Like, I assume that most people have a pretty good handle on what they're paying, outlaying, like, for the big things, but it's to track all the dollars you're spending for an entire month outside of that, like eating out and, you know, discretionary, just spending, you know, going to the movie or whatever it is, like all the kind of fluff, the extra, and see, because a lot of times people don't realize that, oh, they have this habit of going to Target once a week and spending $50 or something. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, whatever their thing is, right? Like, everybody has one, whatever that looks
yeah.
like. And so until you have the self-awareness to realize that these things are happening, you struggle to get them fixed, right?
Yeah.
Because you're just not aware. And I honestly think the other thing that people don't realize is, and this is coming from somebody who's ADHD, so a lot of things, like, my brain can get very overwhelmed with stuff. And I think people are like, oh, our grandparents, you know, had such an easier way of succeeding. Yes and no. I think some of that was because there was less stuff. Right.
Yeah.
Like, grandma and grandpa weren't dealing with, you know, 8 million different kinds of streaming services, and they didn't have this option here and that option there. And, oh, we can go out and do this. And, oh, you know what I mean? And so, like, all those choices are so cool and so great. But then on the same token, they can be a real drain financially. In fact, my husband and I were looking at it last night about the streaming services, and he was like, one of our girls pays for a streaming service that we utilize sometimes. And he's like, that's $80 a month. And I said, oh, yeah. I said, yeah, absolutely. And I said, and then, you know, you end up having Prime, and then you have this subscription to this other one. And I said, it's way more expensive than what cable used to be. Now, the beauty is that if you are really diligent and you only watch one show, right, or like one main thing, you could just pay for the one. But let's be real, nobody does that, right? Like, they have Hulu and Netflix and Disney Plus. And
yes, 100%.
Prime, and they have all the channels through Prime, yeah, or whatever. And
this,
you're like, holy crap.
Yeah, and this, it breaks my heart as a financial advisor, because you have all the streaming services, you have the brand new car, you have all those things, but you're not saving a dime for your future. So you're living a very comfortable existence that is on the, you're on the brink of financial failure, and you're not passing on anything to your heirs, to your kids, to nothing. You're just enjoying your time while you're here with no thought of what the future could look like for you. You know, I'm so thankful now, you know, like, I'm so thankful that I learned when I was in my 20s like and struggling financially, like how to say no to myself. You know, how to say no to myself. And then also too, we talked about comparison too. I think when you have kids as parents, it's even harder because you're like, I want to give them this, I want to give them that, I want to give them. You know, my wife, I mean, her family shopped at a food pantry when she was growing up. You know, she didn't come from money. And so she doesn't need to spend money to have a good time. She loves just going to a park or going to a pool or going to this or finding ways, playing a game, finding ways to have fun with the kids and create memories. That doesn't mean they need to have every brand new gaming system and need to have, you know, they need to have a membership to Six Flags or this amusement park, and they need to go to this many camps and, you know, all this stuff. Hey, rather than playing five sports, pick one sport. You know, pick one and we'll go and just like in teaching, instead of teaching and giving opportunity to kids, teach them contentment
For sure.
and then
Well, and
the value of discipline and hard work.
there's also ways that I think people, discount, like, for instance, if you want to do something with your kids, it does cost money, right? Besides just going to, like, parks or, different things that are free, playing games at the house or whatever all that looks like. Like, we invest every year to do this one water park that's local. It's kind of on the smaller side or whatever. And we do that because we'll go there for just an hour or two. So we don't have to spend money to buy all the food there and, like, all the extra expenses that sometimes comes with that, right? Like, we'll eat something at the house beforehand and then go spend a couple hours at the water park and then be done. You know what I mean? And so sometimes people don't think all the way through that you've got a lot of really great choices and options that you can do. And I say all the time that part of what made a really big impression on me with money was the resilience in a way that my mom created in us. Like, she was very strict. We received an allowance for chores that we did, and we had to buy everything it is we wanted. That was it. If we didn't have the cash in our hand, and it had to be in our hand. So, like, if we went to Target and it was in our piggy bank, nope. You'd have to wait until the next time you went to Target. I mean, my mom was strict, man. And so now.
Well, I actually love that because that's the credit card mentality, right? So like I have money in my bank account, but I don't want my debit card with me. And so I'll just put it on a credit card, and then you decide that, oh, hey, wait a second, I think I don't want pay off that right off. I don't want to pay that right off right now. I can wait till next month. And that's like credit card mentality is if, hey, I don't have it right now, but I could pay it off later. So I love that. I think that's genius.
Yeah, she had, like, I talked to one episode about she had little buckets, like, we had three baby food jars, and it was spending, savings, and tithe. And we had equal buckets each week got put into the different things. Tithe was non-negotiable. We had to give that to the church. That was not an option. The other one, if you wanted to put your spending into your savings bucket and you wanted to hold it till the next week it doubled. So you were heavily incentivized to save.
Yeah, so we have one that's spending, saving, giving, and then there was a share category, and I crossed that out because I didn't like that, and I put invest. So we have spend, save, give, and invest, and that's the four categories the girls have.
I love that. No, but I mean, I think those kind of things do start really young. I mean, you start teaching your kids about stuff, and you also start teaching them. I mean, I talked the last I talked probably in the last month or so a lot about the student loan aspect and really being diligent to consider all the different options on the education front. And the reason I talked about that is because I do not want entire generations of people, whether it be the parents, the kids, or both, saddled with so much debt that it literally is drowning them. Because it's a huge issue and a huge epidemic. And the truth is that there are other options and there's other ways and there's other things to think about. But if we're not having conversations with our kids, right? Just like our parents should have been having conversations with us and maybe they didn't. Even if you don't know, I get it. Some of you are listening to these conversations we're having and they're like, well, that's great. But you guys work in the financial space, so you guys can have those conversations with your kiddos. No, I promise. Like, if you just start having conversations with money, your kids are going to start asking questions. And if you don't have all the answers, you can look them up. You can find them. You can find resources like his book. Like, you know, there's so many different educational options out there for kids to teach them about money anymore. Like, you have choices, but understand, just like the financial stuff didn't fall on a rock out of your head, you know, out of the sky when you were 18 and like, woohoo, you knew what you were doing with money.
And also, too, like, I think the best teacher is your example, right? And so, like, you go to the grocery store and or you go to the store and you say no to that. You say no to this. You say no to this. Say yes to that. You know, one of my cars is a 2009 Acura MDX with 160,000 miles on it that I own outright. And, you know, my kids want me to get a Tesla. Like, I want to get a Tesla too, but I'm like, but I'm not going to do that right now. Number one, because you'll trash it. I know you will. You'll trash it. I'll find raisins and bananas in the back seat, you know, and you can't vacuum up. You can't vacuum up bananas. You discovered, but like, why do you drive that car? And then, you know, everyone in the neighborhood has a brand new car. And I'm like, I don't care. I'm like, I don't, you know, this car costs me nothing. It costs me nothing. It costs me nothing to insure it. I said, and if it breaks down, cool. I'll just get another one then at that point. And it's like, I'm teaching them, can I afford a nicer car? I 100% can. Have I said no to myself? Yes, I've said no to myself because I'm saving for them, their future. I'm saving for another asset. I'm saving for this. I'm saving for that. I don't want to just drive around a nicer car so I feel good at the expense of my future goals, right? And so, like, just living by example, if you're a parent and you're listening to this, invite your kids into your money decisions, which means you have to make some good ones. But then you can explain to them, why did you decide not to buy that? Or even your mistakes are amazing teachers.
I think owning your mistakes is one of the bigger ones or whatever with your kids. Even if necessarily it wasn't a mistake when you originally made it, but like, you know, as life showed you, maybe I should have made a different choice. Like showing them that, having that conversation is huge.
Yeah, I do that with everything, even with investing. Daddy made an investment mistake. Daddy made a good investment decision. You know, now my kids own stock. You know, they for a while they own Tesla now, Tesla stock. They used to own Purple Mattress. And so every single day they'd be like, hey, Daddy, how's Purple Mattress doing today? And I'm like, you know, like, so they're understanding ownership, what it means to be an investor versus what does it means to be a consumer. I want my kids to be investors, not just, and these are little things that we can teach them now, little seeds, that's all they are. $100 in a stock account for your kids, $200 that you give to every once in a while. That is a seed that is going to produce a plant that's going to bear fruit in their life in the future because they understood how to be an investor versus a consumer. Yesterday, my kids had a flower stand outside the house. They sold $61 worth of flowers, $61. So now we're talking about, okay, cool. What are we going to do with this $60? How are we going to divide it up? And my daughter, my oldest daughter, she stayed out there until like 7 o'clock because there was one more bundle of flowers that she wanted to sell. And she came inside. I'm like, it's fun to make money, huh? She goes, yeah. You know, and like, it's not a ton of stuff, but it helps.
Well, the other thing is that I think a lot of people have to understand and realize a lot of people, and I don't know why they think this, they think that if they shield their children from money, right, like not giving them money, just buying them whatever they want, not showing them how to make it, that they're doing them a favor. And it's actually very much the opposite. First of all, we create a lot of our self-worth from our ability to provide, right, for ourselves, for other people. The fact that now your daughter can go and buy something for you for Father's Day with her own money that has nothing to do with you having to hand her a $20 bill. Like, she can go, she can spend it. I mean, there is a lot of self-worth and resilience and good stuff that comes from that. But I think so often, because there is a lot of negative connotation around money, right? Not having enough, you know, a place of lack and all these different things. Because of that attitude, people don't understand all the good that it's doing for their children. And it's just, it's so sad to me because literally it's one of the reasons I'm such an independent person is because of those lessons early on in my childhood. And it's just so important for you to be able to do that with your kids, and just, and also with the other people in your space, right? Maybe they're not your children, but they're your nieces or your nephews, right? Like, people are touching the next generation, whether it be their actual children or not.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, I'm a big believer in some things are taught, but most things are caught. And like, any parenting expert will tell you, is there such thing as a parenting expert? I'm not one of them, but it's amazing to me that my kids, they will not do what I teach them, but they will do what they see me doing, both good and bad. And, most things are caught. And so if that means, what are you spreading?
Right.
What are you spreading? And so, even simple things, you know, like, do you get up early? Do you work out? Do you make your bed? Do you take a lazy, apathetic approach to life? Or do you kind of grab the bull by the horns and prioritize things like, you know, exercise and mental health and emotional health and working out? And my wife is, you know, we have three kids. She's been working out a lot lately because we're taking an anniversary trip later this year. And so at first couple of weeks, you know, she's working out by herself. This morning I went for my walk. I came back and all three kids were working out with her.
That's awesome.
Because that's just, it's power. It's powerful. Some things are taught, most things are caught.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah. Well, it has been so amazing. So tell everybody like where they can find you. I know that you said that I think your book's on Amazon. So
yes.
Tell them that and we'll wrap us up.
Yeah. So my social handle is my name, PJ Vescovi. I can't get any more Italian, Vescovi. I'm on most Instagram, Facebook, you know, TikTok, YouTube. And then to get the book is on Amazon.com. It's called The Great Money Reform. It's got a picture of a bull on the front cover. You can get it on Amazon. I think it's $19.95. Tremendous read and really easy to get through. And if you approach it as a study guide, that's the best way to approach it.
Yeah, for sure. No, I love that. Well, and thank you so much for being on today. Yeah. Like I said, I mean, I already told you I could talk about money until I'm blue in the face, but I think it's such an important conversation, and it's so important for us to continue conversations about money with professionals, with people who don't feel like they're professionals with money and all of the things, because without those conversations, you just hoping that one day, based on the amount of situations you've been placed in with money, it's going to get better. I could promise you it's going to be intentionality. It's going to be actively seeking out experts or things that resonate with you, that resonate with what your plan looks like, with where you're heading in life. That's going to be what's really going to move the needle for you and your family. And so hopefully this episode has shown you and given you some of those insights into things like that. And we hope to see you again next week on another episode of Financial Mastery Simplified.